This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. We've got lots to get to. We'll get into the Frozen Frenzy, the 16 games last night. But when you've got a buddy that writes a book, and I got a bunch of them. I just read Todd Ehrlich's book on the top 20 moments in New York sports history. And, of course, Kenny Albert's got his book. But I was really looking forward to this one from Rick Carpinello. Covered the Rangers for 40 years for the Journal News, for The Athletic, for MSG Network. And he wrote a book, The Franchise, A Curated History of the New York Rangers. And he's such a great writer and such a great friend. I wanted to have him on to promote the book. He's Rick Carpinello. Rick, Don LaGreca, how are you, buddy? Thanks for giving us a couple of minutes, man. This should be fun.
I'm doing great, Don, and thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and I totally miss being around you guys all the time. Yeah. Although I do see you in my living room every afternoon, but I do miss being around.
You know, Rick is one of those guys, and I hope at least this is how I feel about you. Hopefully, you agree. Is that you're just one of those guys that I would always look to see how you felt about what was going on in the game. Like I'd have my opinion on that first period. And we sometimes it would just be a look. I'd come out of the booth, we kind of look at each other and be like, they need to play better. All right. Yeah, it just and then you always had your thing on social media. So, you know, first period, like, what do you think? I've always felt that not that you were opinionated, you just had a feel for the game. And it was interesting reading the book that when you first started covering the team in 1979, it wasn't necessarily your favorite sport. It was something that it kind of grew with you, right? With hockey, that just the knowledge of it wasn't something that came with birth. It was something that kind of grew as time went on, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was a fan of the teams in the early 70s. I kind of lost interest as I got later into high school, and then when they traded Vic Hadfield and waived Eddie Jalkanen, I lost interest for a while. But it's not to say that I wasn't a hockey fan growing up, because I was. I played the game just in pickup scenario. But then all of a sudden I went from covering high school sports on a huge break to covering the New York Rangers in 78-79, and certainly didn't plan on being a hockey writer my whole life much, but it grew, and it became my life. And I did a lot of other things, and I think I kind of talk about some of the funny stuff I did in other sports in the introduction, and my experiences with baseball and football and other sports. But hockey obviously took over my life, and I grew to love it again, and I do. I still do. I still watch the games all the time.
But you just had more than a lot of other writers, just a real feel for the game, not just the score and all the basic stuff that we all watch, but you really. I got a sense that you really understood the ins and outs of the game. Who do you credit that to?
Well, thank you, first of all. I think a lot of that starts with Herb Brooks, because I spent so much time with him. He was such an available guy. And he taught me a lot of things about the areas between, 10 feet inside each blue line and the entire neutral zone, and how important that part of the ice was, and how you can't turn pucks over in that portion of the ice, and if you do, here's the danger you're going to face. And those are the little things that I didn't have a clue about. I just thought they were going back and forth with no plan whatsoever. It was just a matter of who had more skill, and it wasn't that at all. And so starting with those conversations, and then Roger Nielsen too, I learned a lot from being allowed to spend time with those guys, and for them to explain things to me about what was going on in the game. And of course, the players, Dave Maloney, who I think the guy understands the game inside and out and can explain it inside and out. And I get to spend a lot of time with him. So, I think he's osmosis a lot. But I also think, I'd like to think I'm an observant person. And I'm not just sitting there with my eyes open watching a ping pong game with my eyes going back and forth. I'm trying to understand what I'm watching. And I'm not saying that I understand it to the level of those people, certainly not. But, you know, I think I did learn quite a bit mm-hmm. along the way, and I tried to, you know, portray that in my writing.
And the book starts where it started for you, in that 78-79 season, which Ranger fans should always look to at a certain age, of a run to the Stanley Cup Final and up 1-0 against Montreal in that Stanley Cup Final, and the characters and the names, you know, Phil Esposito and, as you said, Dave, yeah. you know, Maloney, Ron Greschner, John Davidson. Just what a group to have to follow to start. And I just wonder, Rick, then continuing to be around the team and the fans for 40 years, do you think, as great as 94 was, Did it do a disservice to 79? Is 79 not remembered as well as it should be?
I think maybe so. You know, I think that team was a little more of a fluke. And I'm not saying it wasn't a good team. It certainly was a good team. But, you know, I don't think that was at any point during the season, somebody would say, that's the best team in the league this year. Not close to that. The Islanders were clearly the better team, and the Canadians were clearly the better team, and so I don't think you get the credit along the lines of the 93-94 team. That team was expected to win the Stanley Cup. 78-79 team was probably not expected to even get to the semifinals, and the win over the Islanders was epic. I mean, that's the part that goes probably underappreciated. Is that six game win over the Islanders? That was the loudest I've ever heard Madison Square Garden when that series ended. That was incredible, and throughout that series, just loud from start to finish. And that was when you look at what happened right after, the Islanders won their next 19 consecutive yeah. playoff series and 4 Stanley Cups. That was an achievement that certainly goes under the radar, in my opinion. Leading Montreal 1-0 and up 2-0 in game 2, you know, that's stuff when you start thinking about mythical. But, you know, they obviously got their comeuppance from the Canadians, who were the dynasty of the day. And so I don't think, you know, again, I don't think that team gets full credit for what it did. And I'll say this again, and I've said this a few times, no team has ever, ever, ever had more fun running through 4 rounds of playoffs than that team did. They enjoyed every moment of it, and probably to their detriment in the end.
For sure. And all the just the stories about how they – and Dave's talked about it too. You know, they win game 1 and there's a little bit of a delay. Let's get out of Montreal. Let's not stay in this crazy town. But you said it just – it was just in their nature to take advantage of it. Maybe they would have lost anyway. I mean, this is the Canadians. They were in the midst of right. one of the greatest runs of all time, but they probably didn't do any favor staying in downtown Montreal after the game 1 win.
Right. And they, you know, they were complaining, first of all, that Montreal had the game switched from Saturday night to Sunday afternoon, which gave them the extra nights in Montreal. They thought the Canadians got favor from the league along those lines, because the Canadians' previous series went 7 games, and they changed the schedule to favor the Canadians, the Rangers thought. And then comes the real crazy fun part, where Scotty Bowman decides to go away from Kenny Dryden, the Hall of Fame legend in goal, and go to backup Bunny LaRocque. And then during warm-ups before game 2, LaRocque gets hit in the mask by Doug Rysbaugh's slap shot and gets knocked out cold. And Dryden has to come back in. And so, you know, that's all. And then the Rangers still led 2-0 in that game. But, you know, that's crazy stuff right there, and stuff that made you start thinking, wow, you know, the Rangers could win this thing.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, the Canadians' skill and talent took over after that.
And as you mentioned, you love other sports just besides hockey. And being a Met fan, I look at that 86 Mets team, and as much as I loved it and I love that season, I think what could have been. That team should have won way more than just the one championship they did. You feel the same way about the 94 Rangers?
I do. You know, they were long in the tooth to some degree, but the Meech, Richter, Graves, Kovalov, those guys were in at Zubac. Those guys weren't, some of them weren't even near their primes yet. You know, I thought that the lockout the following year really hurt them. I think that, you know, there were some steps along the way that hurt. They certainly eventually paid for the Amonte trade, which helped them win the cup, but really cost them down the road. I think they paid for the Gleitner for Anderson trade, which, you know, was made at the deadline in 94. I think that team could have. And, you know, they had all that upheaval with Keenan leaving right after the parade and a new coach coming in, then the lockout, then Messier's contract. And, you know, I think it was doomed. It was kind of doomed right from the start that their chance to win back-to-back and or multiples was kind of down the drain. Yeah, I also wonder often if they, in 92, if they'd made the Lindros trade, if they were able to make that Lindros trade, you know, would they have won in 93, 94? Maybe not, because of all the assets they would have had to give up to get Eric Lindros. But maybe down the road, they would have won a couple more. So, you know, there's a lot of what-ifs around that team. And one of my favorite, well, not favorite, but one of the things that always pops into my mind, and I wrote about it a little bit in the book, is what if they didn't win 93-94? You know, what if the Devils won Game 6 or Game 7? And what if Vancouver had won Game 7? And easily, all those things could have happened. Then you're looking at 0-83 and how differently you look at Mark Messier's tenure as a Ranger, and how differently, you know, do Richter and Graves even get their numbers up in the ceiling? You know, certainly Leach does, but, you know, you look at how different that whole scenario would have been, and what kind of regret they would all have had, Neil Smith and Mike Keenan. So there's a lot of what-ifs on both sides of it, but certainly they were built to possibly win one or two more, and they didn't do it.
No, and it, not only would they have not won, like, say, if they had lost to the Devils in Game 7, you know, now the Devils probably get another cup, so they'd have four. The Islanders would have four.
Right.
The Rangers would be 0-83. I mean, it just, you're right. It, ifs and buts and all that, but that came close. Much like the 86 Mets, too, as dominant as they were, you know, almost they would have lost Game 7 if Scott would pitch, if they didn't win Game 6, and how close they came to losing to the Red Sox. It's just crazy that how the whole world would have changed Ranger-wise if they had lost that game.
And by the way, I think today's the anniversary of Mookie Wilson's ground ball, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is.
And I was there for that series too, and that was nuts. And that was absolutely one of the craziest things I've ever seen. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of similarities there. And the Mets, I think, more than the Rangers, should have won more than one there with that team they had there.
Yeah.
for sure.
What is you know, you mentioned 79 when you started, and of course 94 was great. Post 94, what are some of your favorite moments?
Well, there was, you know, that from the moment they decided that Mark Messier was no longer going to be part of their team going forward, and they did in 90. That, you know, that was their plan. 97, from top management on down. From that moment on, those were the dark ages. I mean. And what stuns me to this day was 96-97, the Rangers went to the conference finals and they got squashed by Philadelphia. And they were banged up when they played that series. But when you look at what happened thereafter, that was Mark Messier's last playoff game, okay?
Yeah.
He's still toward the end of his prime. That was Wayne Gretzky's last playoff game ever. That was Mike Richter's last playoff game ever. Brian Leach's last playoff game as a Ranger. He played a couple later on. Adam Graves' last playoff game as a Ranger. Just incredible. none of those guys ever played another playoff game as a Ranger. And Gretzky and Messier never, for anybody, played another playoff game. Just tragic, really. And so I really call those the dark ages, what followed there, when they kind of tried to rebuild by spending money, when they went out and signed Theo Fleury and the other five free agents that year, and they were trying to buy a bridge to a rebuild that never actually happened and wasn't very successful. And then, you know, the coaching mistakes with John Muckler and then later on with Ron Lowe and Brian Trotche. It was just it was the dark ages, and nobody could have foreseen it coming. And also, you know, just going back one step to what we were talking about a moment ago, can you imagine what the 1940 chance would be like right now if they still hadn't won? they were bad 30 years ago. Those years, they were just flailing about, really changing directions every 5 seconds, changing coaches, changing general managers, it went from worst to worst in no time. And then, of course, there were 7 years without a playoff and another lockout. And then they finally turned it around to some degree.
Are you a believer, Rick, the lockout saved them? The salary cap forced them to get away from the free spending and the bad contracts and put them on the right path?
Yeah, I think it did to a large degree. They still had their issues. What saved them, too, was because of the cap. You're right. Because of the cap, they had to make moves like trading Scott Gomez, which turned out to be one of the greatest trades in history.
Sure.
When they got Ryan McDonough, and then with the money they saved on Gomez's contract, they signed Marion Gaborik, and then with one of the players they got in the McDonough trade, they traded for Brandon Prust. And all of a sudden, you get a whole new look on the team. And then, of course, they bring in John Tortorella, who's got a Stanley Cup under his belt and he's not the most popular guy in the world, but can sure get guys to play and run through walls for him for a few years until the shelf life comes due. I think that was a turning point. That lockout was a turning point.
Well, where can they get the book?
Well, you can get it anywhere you buy books. You know, if you go, it's in bookstores now everywhere. You can get it at Barnes & Noble online. You can get it at Amazon. You can go directly to Triumph Books, Goodreads, any place where you buy books. It's now available this week. I think it's in the stores already. And it's just, I'm really excited about this one because this is my third, and this is the first one that I'm really excited about that's really, I think, really done the right way. And I'm just so thrilled to talk about it and to have done this. I'm very proud of myself. And I also probably could have written 3 times what I wrote.
Right.
All the stories I had backed up in 43 years. But, yeah, it's a really fun day for me.
Well, I'll tell you, not because you're a friend, but it's a truth. If you're out there listening and you say to yourself, I know the Rangers backwards and forwards. I don't need another book. Yes, you do, because it's Rick Carpinello his fingerprints are all over this. Like, I just love, like, little things. Like, you just throw, that's why you were a great read when you covered the team. Like, you throw your personal opinion in, you make it your own. Like, when you talk about when the merger with the WHA came in, and there were, like, questions about, can this diminutive Wayne Gretzky, who wasn't particularly the fastest player, he wasn't the biggest player, is he going to be able to translate into the NHL? And you admit, you were one of those people. They weren't sure. And you were dead wrong. Yeah. You throw that in to the sentence to let you know that, hey, I'm a fan too. I'm opinionated too. This isn't just a regurgitation of events that happened. You lived it. You had opinions at the time. You were right sometimes. You were wrong sometimes. You admit all that. You've got a flurry of quotes from Herb Brooks, which was a quote machine. You got a chance to talk to the fog of Freddie Shiro. So all of that is all in the book. So if you think you know the Rangers or you think you know enough about the Rangers, get the book anyway. You'll be pleasantly surprised.
Thank you so much, Don. I appreciate the kind words. I was wrong about Gretzky. I thought he was all hype. but I was right sometimes, too. So I appreciate you, the kind words, and I appreciate you taking the time to have me on here.
Of course. The franchise, the New York Rangers, a curated history of the original six franchise, the New York Rangers. Best of luck with the book, and I know you're retired now, but hopefully I'll see you down the road at the Garden. We'll have a chance to talk some hockey.
Hope so, Donovan. I'll certainly see you this afternoon. I'm like you did.
All right, thanks a lot. That's Rick Carpinello. Check out the book, and he's a gem. He really is. He would, and because of the relationship he had with that 78-79 team, and doing Ranger games is great because those guys are around. You know, obviously, some people have passed away. You know, Carol Vanier is no longer with us, and such. And of course, Ron Gilbert was not on the 79 team, but you know he'd be around all the time. And I'd sit there with Ron Greshner and talk, and of course doing the games with Dave Maloney and you know Don Maloney sometimes with Calgary's in town or as the general manager Arizona would come in, and just to hear their stories and to get a chance to talk to them, just amazing. It's such a privilege to be around it. And Rick had a connection. He'd come into the booth during the intermission, talk to Dave, get some information. Larry Brooks is like this too, where just kind of like, hey, listen, I know a lot about hockey, but I don't know it as well as the guys that played it. Let me get a little bit more information. And it was just a thing with Rick. Come at you after a first period, you know, Rick would be walking by the booth. We'd just make eye contact, like, eh, that wasn't a great period. Or, hey, look, they're onto something tonight. It's just, and all that, you get the feel of it in the book. So definitely check it out. He's an absolute gem. I wanted to get into the Frozen Frenzy, and we had Rick on, so we took up a lot of time here. We'll get more. I think Friday will be a little bit more interactive with the tweets and all that, to get your opinion on what happened last night. I thought it was terrific. Now, it's a lot. It's sensory overload with all these games going on, especially early. But I thought Buchegrass and Weeks did a terrific, terrific job. I thought the NHL put its best foot forward as far as the games. And no Connor McDavid, but you saw a ton of goals scored, a lot of great games, a lot of games that came down to the end, a couple of games in overtime. I thought that Buffalo-Ottawa game, you know, talk about a game that probably wasn't on your radar going in, and it wasn't on your radar for like 55 minutes of the game, and then all of a sudden 5-1 becomes 5-4, and Ottawa's got a power play, and they almost came back and won that game. And I went 8-8 in my 16 leg parlay, so unfortunately I didn't go 16-0, but maybe you made some money on some of the bets that I had. I took a flyer, literally, on the Flyers, who had a 2-1 lead going to the third, but they blew it. So the Golden Knights are 7-0. The Avalanche now 6-0. They put up a touchdown against the Islanders, and Rantanen scored, and McKinnon scored. And I thought it was a couple of good wins for Winnipeg, as they now have come wins off of, over the Oilers and the Blues back-to-back nights. They win 4-2. How about this? Jack Hughes, 4 assists in the Devils' win over the Montreal Canadiens last night. He's got 14 points in the first 5 games to start the season. That's the most that anybody's ever had in that short a period of time since Mario Lemieux had 17 for the Penguins back in the 92-93 beginning of the season. So Connor, Jack Hughes making a huge step forward for the Devils. Bruins also undefeated. They had a 3-0 win over Connor Bedard, who thought he scored a goal in the first period, but it was taken off the board because of offside. But then that's the cool thing about the Frozen Frenzy. You're kind of on top. It was easier to be on top of everything because everything was happening in fast motion. So we're going to do another one of these on Friday. I'd love to be able to get your reaction to the Frozen Frenzy at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct, to see if you liked it. Social media, people seem to really like it. Anthony, what did you think of it? I know you were embedded in what was going on last night. Did you enjoy how ESPN handled the Frozen Frenzy?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I thought it was awesome. If you are a fan of hockey like I am and like you are, Don, and you do have a favorite team, but you just love watching the sport, before the Ranger game, that was what I watched. I watched every goal. It was exciting. It made it feel like NFL Red Zone, yeah, which is something that everybody enjoys. And it's great for betting. It's great for keeping an eye on, you know, anytime goal scores, let's say. It was great. It was great.
Yeah, and people were asking, like, why are you doing it on a Tuesday night and not a Saturday night? Well, there's obvious reasons. ESPN's invested in college football, and And it just made sense for it to be during the week. I guess they didn't catch that big of a break because there was a Game 7 in baseball. The hope was that if you were a hockey fan, that maybe Philly would have won Game 6 and they would have kind of had the night to themselves with the exception of the couple of NBA games. But you know what? Baseball is a slower type sport. You can flip around. I didn't see any of the ratings yet. We'll probably have them for you on Friday, but I'm sure that it was terrific and it really was an opportunity for the NHL to kind of, in the landscape of the NFL and the baseball playoffs and the NBA opening up, sometimes you can kind of get blanketed and kind of forgotten, but that was a moment. The NHL, I thought, owned the night. It was a lot of fun and a great job, and you know, we'll see if they'll do it later in the season. We'll see if it's something that becomes a yearly event.
Question for you, Don.
Pretty cool. Yes, Anthony.
Do you think they need to have all the teams in action? Now, this made it feel big, of course, but if there's a night where there's, I don't know, your standard 7-8 games, even if they don't stagger the starts, because we have such a great team here at ESPN. You saw PK came in and made chicken parm with Bucci and Weeks at the end of the night. Like, you could go into intermissions and have interviews. They had Gary Bettman on. Like, if there's intermissions overstacking, you could do this with 8 or 9 games.
You could, but I'm not saying that you shouldn't. And as EJ said back on Monday, you know, the NHL Network does that a lot, too. But I think to get all, it's still a regional sport, Anthony. Like, so what you want to do is you want to try to get all of the teams involved so all the fans feel like they're invested in the night. So, because let's face it, the way the sport, just even yourself, I mean, you're a sick hockey fan, but you know, if the Rangers weren't playing last night, a lot of Ranger fans might not have been invested in it at all. You know, so I hear what you're saying, but I think there's something special about all 32 teams being involved, so all the fan bases are invested. So that's going to move the needle, and then you hope to be able to get other people involved that are maybe don't have a favorite team or hockey is not necessarily on their radar, but will be on a night like that because of the sheer volume of the games. So I think it's important. And listen, if you're going to have like 15, you don't want to leave anybody out, right? You want to make sure that everybody, you don't want to feel left out. I mean, it does come at the expense of the day before and the day after, right? We had, what, 2 games on Monday, and then tonight there's only 1 game, the Devils and the Capitals. So I don't love that, but what are you going to do? It was such a great day. And listen, for people that don't know what I do for a living every day, is I'm on the Michael Kay Show, and the Michael Kay Show had Kevin Weeks on. You know, we wouldn't have Kevin Weeks on a Tuesday in late October to promote the slate of games, but we did because it was the Frozen Frenzy. It was something special, so it kind of put their best foot forward out there last night, and I thought it was pretty cool. Other games of note, Rangers win their first 2 of this 5-game road trip. They beat the Flames 3-1. Philip Hedl's got 5 assists in his last 2 games, which is excellent. Calgary, listen, they're missing Anderson because of the stupid penalty he committed. We didn't get a chance to talk about that. Oh, we did with EJ on Monday, leaving his feet, hitting Patrick Laine late in the game that was already decided. He deserves probably more than 4 games. That team doesn't have a ton of talent right now, and you saw a couple of power play goals for the Rangers. They had a 2-1 lead, then late in the second period, there's a 4-on-4, and you see the difference between the two teams, right? Because the Rangers, you know, for however you feel about them, they've got talented players. They've got Kreider, Zibanejad, Panarin, Hedl, Lafreniere, Kako, guys that can kind of fly, guys that can dangle, and you see that 4-on-4. Gustafson gets the goal. Hedl, again, 5 assists in the last 2 games, so Rangers kind of finding their sea legs here a little bit. I thought that was an interesting game, and as I said, the teams that are undefeated right now, so impressive. I guess nobody cares about Boston's start, right? I mean, they broke the record for points in a season, so what does that matter if they do it again? Although it still would be impressive if they did it again, considering it's not exactly the same team as last year. But to see what Colorado's doing, to see what the Vegas Golden Knights are doing, is pretty special. There's a lot of really cool things that are going on in the National Hockey League, and I'm glad we're able to do the podcast. So buy Rick Carpinello's book. Thank you to him for having him on. Thanks to Anthony Pusick, as usual, as well. So, again, we weren't interactive today, but we will get to social media on Friday. At Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll get caught up on everything that happened on Tuesday with the Frozen Frenzy. Get you ready for the weekend. I'll have the call of the Rangers and Canucks on Saturday, so I'm looking forward to that. We will talk to you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.